Welcome to the Book of Mormon Evidence podcast with host Rod Meldrum. This week's Come Follow Me supplemental study is Lesson 31, Alma 43 through 52, Stand Fast in the Faith of Christ. This is part two of two parts with Darren Southam. Darren is a writer and director of over 30 commercials and short films, including the third all-time highest funded short film on Kickstarter in 2017 called Reign of Judges, Title of Liberty Concept Short. Most people know him as the Mountain Man Scout Ephraim Hanks in Ephraim's Rescue. Welcome, Darren Southam.
All right, and so now I want to jump down really quickly to verse. We're still in verse 4 or chapter 43. We're gonna kind of just blow through a lot of the rest of this really quickly. Because we're gonna get long here. But this is verse 46. It says, "And they were doing that which they felt was their duty, which they owed to their God, for the Lord had said unto them, and also unto their fathers, that." And this is really kind of an interesting aspect here. Because I know, you know, when Christ came, he said, you know, you should forgive, you know, 70 times 7. If, you know, they ask you to walk a mile, walk twain, whatever, right? But here, apparently, the Lord had told the Nephites, at least, and they're saying it was the Lord that said this. He said, quote, "Inasmuch as ye are not guilty of the first offense, neither the second, ye shall not suffer yourselves to be slain by the hands of your enemies," unquote. And again, the Lord has said that, quote, "Ye shall defend your families even unto bloodshed," unquote. So basically, if somebody comes after you and your family, and they are wanting to basically spill your blood, that if they come the first time, and then they come a second time, that you are justified basically in going after them, or not going after them, but defending yourselves even to the point of bloodshed. At least that's what the Nephites were taught here. "Therefore, for this cause were the Nephites contending with the Lamanites to defend themselves and their families, their lands, their country, their rights, and their religion." Let's see, verse 49. "It came to pass that they turned upon the Lamanites, and they cried with one voice unto the Lord their God for their liberty and their freedom from bondage." Now, there's a scene in the film that kind of... And it remotely reminds me of
this. And you're talking about the pilot film, the pilot short, 14-minute film, of course.
Yeah, the pilot short film here, basically, where Captain Moroni is standing before his armies, and they're shouting.
Yeah.
It is one of the most powerful, oh my gosh, because you're standing up there and kind of in this amazing, you know, armor and so forth, and I can't remember, what are they shouting?
Freedom. And, you know, we had them chant, all of this, what we've done has been, we've tried to involve, you know, the people that are following the movement. And, we had, I mean, not a ton of people, but we had 150 people come volunteer, at the school over in, Lehi, Utah.
Oh, yeah.
150 people come, and we recorded them chanting this, Hebraic, term, which we manipulated a little bit because we wanted it to sound, you know, sound reformed, like an ancient Hebrew, which, of course, a lot of that is conjecture. You know, we're making things a little bit, but we took basically the Ho-Fe is basically how you'd say freedom, Ho-Fe. Okay. So that's what they're chanting. And when you hear it, I mean, you don't think it's 150 people. It sounds like,
it sounds like thousands.
Hundreds of thousands of people because, you know, we are able to do that, and it's amazing things in the movies. But it was cool. You know, they all came, and they want to be a part of it. And, you know, there's a lot of people, "Hey, that's me. I'm in my voice." And I'm like, that's right. That's right. This is your thing. So
that's very cool.
You got to end on a high note, right? So
yeah,
just a kind of a teaser of the life of this great...
Well, I think we probably teased everybody enough. Can we play the trailer now?
Hi, I'm Darren Southam, writer and director of Reign of Judges, Title of Liberty, an epic period action film like Braveheart, but set in the pre-Columbian New World, the first of a powerful seven-film saga inspiring love, heroism, and freedom.
Finally, the great Moroni. Tell me, free man, Does the last of the Nephite blood still cry out to a god who left him alone to die? Deny him! End this frivolous struggle! The exile wishes to say something.
Saw is a trailer for a breakout concept short film we produced this year, and we need your help to fund our full feature. Reign of Judges: Title of Liberty is based on a famous book that sold over 120 million copies worldwide, with total circulation estimated at over 300 million. The U.S. Library of Congress did a nationwide survey in 2016 where the public voted this book the fourth most influential book in the largest economy in the world. Reign of Judges: Title of Liberty is based on the mighty Book of Mormon. Chances are you've heard of the Book of Mormon, but have no idea what's in it. Even with the seventh highest grossing Broadway show of all time entitled Book of Mormon, over 86% of the world still knows nothing about the book's contents. Whether you're religious or not, the Book of Mormon is the greatest treatise on freedom, a struggle for a nation's independence, and the true meaning of liberty this world has ever seen. And we'd be remiss to treat it lightly. Why would Yale University Press, University of Illinois Press, Doubleday, and Penguin Books all republished the Book of Mormon in its entirety? This popular yet controversial book is one of a kind, and it was written specifically for our time. Of the Book of Mormon's 239 chapters, 174 of them, 73%, deal with war, terrorism, murder, political conspiracies, secret combinations, family collusions, threats, and other hostilities. In contrast, the Book of Mormon also references Jesus Christ nearly 4,000 times. Now, can I prove Reign of Judges: Title of Liberty will be a worldwide phenomenon the likes of Avatar or The Lord of the Rings? Of course not. But I can tell you this. The concept short film we produced this year was the third all-time highest funded short film of Kickstarter in 2017. We assembled an all-star cast and crew, including actors Ben Cross from Star Trek, Eugene Brave Rock from Wonder Woman, and Karina Lombard from Legends of the Fall. We had David Atherton from Dances with Wolves, Christy Hoffman from The Revenant, Clifton Chepua from Gran Torino, and FBFX from Troy and Gladiator. In a first ever limited worldwide theatrical release of a short film, our concept sold nearly 10,000 tickets across 34 US states and 4 different countries. With a $100,000 box office and 8.8 stars on IMDb, this market response to a 14-minute concept film inspired a second Kickstarter to release our concept on Blu-ray DVD and raise funds for our full feature. To date, a combined 4,200 backers raised over $500,000. I know the heroic war stories of the Book of Mormon are destined to sweep the earth like a flood. Film is the most powerful medium, perhaps the only medium, capable of doing this. And no film is better positioned to introduce a riveting Book of Mormon war saga than Reign of Judges: Title of Liberty. It could be years, maybe never, before an opportunity like this comes again. Don't let it pass us by. The ship is ready, and we need your help to bring the rain. The average budget for a period action film in Hollywood is about $116 million. But we can make a mainstream, full-length major motion picture complete with the best talent in Hollywood for $20 to $40 million. Some may say that's not possible. It's too risky. But often, the greater the risk, the greater the reward. Take Marvel Studios, for example. No one can argue the cinematic titan it has become, but few remember how it started. Major studios and over 30 writers turned down Iron Man for more than a decade before Marvel finally took out massive loans, risking everything to make it themselves. A move dubbed one of the riskiest ventures in cinematic history. Who could have predicted the bold risk to create and fund a first-time studio with Iron Man would lead Marvel to top $4 billion at the box office in 2018. Reign of Judges: Title of Liberty is an ancient Captain America story that will change the world. We cannot expect a venture like this to be without risk. I've given over $300,000 of my time and money to this project. I've given my life to it, but I cannot finish this race without you. Edmund Burke said, "The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men and women to do nothing. If not us, then who? If not now, then when?" We're living in the most crucial era in the history of the world, and Reign of Judges: Title of Liberty is a part of it. By supporting us today, you will spread the spirit of freedom worldwide, beginning with the mighty ancient American hero, Captain Moroni, and his title of liberty. You will inspire millions, hopefully billions, to stand for freedom, to be more heroic and courageous in the spiritual war of our time. Here are three ways you can fund our full feature right now. Watch and share as gifts our breakout concept short film, ready to ship in full HD Blu-ray DVD. Make a donation or invest in our full feature and share in its profits for the life of the film. Now is our opportunity. Now is our time. Buy, donate, or invest today.
Wow. It's interesting watching that now.
Yeah.
I mean, if we were in the crucial era of history when I did that video 2 years ago.
We are so much closer to that crucial era. We are living in that crucial era now. Wow.
Right.
That is absolutely powerful. So so we somehow this has got to happen. I think the time is short, you know. I mean, seriously, we're looking at
Jesus
the breakdown of society
about,
as we know it.
10-13 years, Jesus is going to come, so yeah. We've got a few years.
we do have a few years, but how long would it take you to actually make this film, you think?
Well, if we were funded today, we could probably turn it in probably less than a year.
Really? Wow.
And I obviously that sounds ludicrous to like a studio level film, but because we're operating independently, we can move a lot faster, get things done.
So you got to tell us. I mean, how did you get Ben Cross? And you know, some of these actors here are just like, wow.
Yeah, Ben Cross was actually this is kind of how it works. You get your first actor, usually kind of the anchor actor, and then you know, lots of people fall in once that happens. And Ben Cross was he was a miracle. I mean, I watched him on First Night. I grew up watching him, and and I'm like, I'm calling him to be in our.
Wasn't he Maligant?
Maligant.
He was Maligant in First Night. Yeah.
And he did great. He stole the show. His breakout role was Chariots of Fire.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah. Yep.
So, you know, calling his agent and then you know, FaceTiming him after he accepted. I remember coming out in the morning because he's in Bulgaria, so he's totally different. We're like opposites on us. So I come out in the morning and I just got the email from his agent. He said he's in, and I came out of our bedroom and I was like, "We got Ben Cross." My whole family's in the room, and then from Ben Cross we got Karina Lombard and Eugene Brave Rock, Legends of the Fall, you know, Wonder Woman, respectively. And then I got on the horn and you know, a lot of these people are like, how'd you call it? I just called him. I just looked up. I'm really good at profiling people. I'm not a creepo, but when I want to try to find somebody, I can usually get there. I called David Atherton, who did the makeup on The New World and Dances with Wolves. I mean, Academy Award winning shows.
The guy that did the Hellas and so forth. That was amazing.
Well, he didn't do the Hellas. So that was FBFX. So they
the helmet here, right? Yeah. I thought the one that the bone one that Katrina.
Oh yes, wore. That was our hairstylist. He's Clifton Chippewa, from the Chippewa tribe. I mean, imagine that. Right?
That's cool,
his last name. Yeah, he made those, and I really gave them freedom. He says this in a behind the scenes. He said, "Surprise me." That's exactly what I said. I said, "Surprise me." I gave him some ideas of what I think, but then I'm like, "Yeah, you do your thing," and they ran with it. And you know, Clifton's he's never read the Book of Mormon. Christy Hoffman, who did our costumes, she worked on Captain America and The Revenant. Yeah. She's not a member of the church. I don't think she's ever read the Book of Mormon. None of them had read it, and so that was also part of getting it done quickly. Is that I had read it so many times, I could quickly bring people who hadn't read it to speed. Okay, here's where we're at.
About,
And we moved really quick. We shot 6.5 pages of action in basically a day on location in Oregon. I mean, the amount of things that we shot in one of shortened daylight, mind you, because this was like the second week of December.
Yeah.
So we're wintertime. We got less, like two or something less hours of daylight. And there were just lots of miracles that would take I'm going to write a book someday.
Well, Ben Cross was clearly, he was pretty moved. But in fact, where can people find the You have that kind of behind the scenes.
So yeah, we'll have to drop this in throughout just because people frustrated can't find it. It's real easy. So just rainmovie.com. Rain as in judge reigning or king reigning.
Yeah.
Rainmovie.com, and you just click on buy, and then you can either download and stream it, or you can buy a physical Blu-ray DVD. Comes in one, you get all of that. You get the behind the scenes and the pilot short as well,
and you bring it closer to actually fruition.
Exactly, you're supporting the project
because you've raised a lot of money so far, but there's a lot of money still to go, folks.
Yeah, so and most people don't know, like, it costs a lot just to get the word out, marketing. Oh my gosh,
it's not cheap.
Tens of thousands of dollars just to.
Yeah,
I mean they do a really good job on social media and everywhere else of making sure people don't see your stuff unless you've paid.
Yeah.
It's hard. That's been one of the challenges, but. But you can support it. You can also donate, and those donations are important because again, it helps us kind of keep going.
Yeah.
And we've got some great things going right now, even though the world's turning upside down. It seems providentially have been some doors that have been opening that wouldn't have been open if the pandemic hadn't happened, for example,
non-Mormon sources you've had.
Yes.
Non-members have actually donated. A lot of them have donated.
Yeah, one of basically our other producer is not even, doesn't even consider himself religious, but he feels wrought upon to be a part of this project. Isn't he's stealing cool? my phrase because he's felt it too. We're working together, and we're working together with the cutting edge technologies to be able to do it for even less than what we said in this video, 20 million, or we're looking at 3 million now, which sounds absolutely absurd, but it's not with the technology that we have. Shows like The Mandalorian and so forth that they've been. I'm stealing your so forth. You're rubbing off.
Yeah, so forth. There we go. So forth.
And I hang out with you.
Get enough. You'll get really into that. All right. Well, that is that's phenomenal. Let's finish up here, folks, with the last little bit here. Like, we actually have barely got to chapter 45 here. So on page 293 in the annotated edition of the Book of Mormon, we have the maps there, and in chapter 45 we have Alma's son Helaman. First off, Alma wants to double check that his son is actually good to go with that. So he asks him several questions that are leading questions. Kind of has an interview with his son. Said, "Do you believe in Christ? Do you believe in the words which I've spoken? Will you keep the commandments?" And he says, "Yes," with all that kind of stuff. And so then, because he kind of passed the test, and Alma basically shares with him something that we're going to see play out in the rest of the book, at the end of the book. He shares with him that the Lord has shown him that their people, they're not going to make good decisions forever.
Yep.
Imagine their people are going to die.
Imagine hearing that.
Their posterity is going to be ended. I just can't even imagine. But he basically says, keep it quiet.
Yeah, don't record it until.
Don't tell anybody.
It's come to pass, right?
Because, we don't want to. Don't want to telegraph that, but also I think you don't want to cause people to go into despair,
right?
Because this is really a hopeless thing,
right?
But yet the leaders of the Nephites from this point on, if they had access to these records, they would have basically known, because he said write it down, and it was in the room of records, the repository of records, where they were keeping the other plates, so they at least would have had some access to it. But apparently they had so many records, by the time Mormon came down to it, Mormon actually, in the words of Mormon, he says, there were so many records, and he said he searched among all the records, and that's when he found the small plates of Nephi. So apparently they didn't have time to just sit there and read, hundreds and hundreds of plates of the ancient writings of the people. But Mormon basically had to at some point in time, so he could make the abridgment.
It's a big, big job.
Yeah. So then, Alma's final words to Helaman. This has to do with his covenant. We've talked about the covenant relationship with the United States and how this has been a covenant land throughout all time. But in verse 16 of chapter 45, it says, "And he said, Thus saith the Lord God, quote, Cursed shall be the land, yea, this land, unto every nation, kindred, tongue, and people, unto destruction, who do wickedly when they are fully ripe, and as I have said, so shall it be. Why is geography important? Because what land are they talking about? If this is talking about Guatemala, then we're off the hook. We don't have to worry. It's just the Guatemalans that have to worry about that, right? But when he says, cursed shall be the land, yea, this land, the land that they are on. Mm-hmm. And then we know that this land is also the same land as the land of the New Jerusalem. And we know where the New Jerusalem is going to be by Revelation, and it's not in Guatemala or Central America or Southern Mexico or Canada or Bolivia or Argentina. We know where the New Jerusalem is going to be. It's in the heartland of what is now the United States of America, which is another reason why we believe that it's very important that we understand what nation it is that they're talking about. Else, why worry about this revelation to hear from the Lord? So then Alma leaves and he's never heard from again.
Yep.
Kind of that mysterious walking off into the sunset.
Translated like Moses.
Yeah.
They said.
We don't know what whatever happened with him, but he basically left. He went like he was going to go over to the land of Melech, and that was it. He never heard from anymore. Then it goes into chapter 46, goes into the Amalekites.
Ites, okay. Yeah.
And so Amalekiah, basically, he talks about there was dissensions, and Helaman had some dissensions. Amalekiah decides he wants to be the king. Now, interesting enough, it says Amalekiah was desirous to be a king. This is verse 4 of chapter 46. And those who were wroth, they were upset because he was not going to be the king, according to Helaman. So it says they were desirous that he should be the king, and they were the greater part of them, the lower judges of the land, and they were seeking for power. So basically, he employed the judges to try to overthrow the government. And how many times does that happen?
And this could be he employed the governors.
Yes.
You know. Yeah. In today's terms, right?
Yeah.
Employed the governors.
Could be judges, that. Governors. Could be whoever it was that was out, in power, basically.
I mean, just think about it politically when you think about that, and what's what we've experienced with different governors.
Yeah.
Hey, if you go with me on this, we'll put you in a position of power in my administration.
That's right.
I mean, this is the same exact stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
And he flattered many, including, I think it's interesting, it says that he was a man of cunning device, yes. Many flattering words, that he led away the hearts of many people to do wickedly and to destroy the church of God. And, in verse 7, it says that they who believed many, he said there were many in the church who believed
flattering words
this guy,
of Malachi.
And they dissented from the church.
Yeah,
and we see that today too. But
yeah, we do.
Then jumping down in 10, we said destroy the church and then destroy the foundation of liberty. And now, if you want to make this point or me, but
go ahead.
I've read that when you hear like the foundation of something, okay, you don't have to be a rocket scientist, okay. What's the foundation? If a house doesn't have a foundation, the thing collapses.
Yeah.
So when he says the foundation of liberty is what Amalekiah sought to destroy.
Yeah, what
and
is
we
that?
Read just above that he said, he flattered them, flattered many hearts of many, a way to do what? To do wickedness. Mm-hmm. And those who want freedom and liberty and to live in wickedness, and let's take away the wickedness word for the people who don't like the scriptures or think it's all stupid. You want to be an evil person and do evil, bad things, and you still want to have freedom and liberty. You want what never has been and never will be. The foundation of liberty is morality and virtue and goodness.
Yeah.
America, it was
seeking
great.
For what's good and right.
Yeah, de Tocqueville. America is great because it's good.
Yeah.
And as soon as we cease to be good, we will cease to be great.
That's right.
And that's what we've become in society, is that that's why we see people are just tossed around by every headline of the news,
every
anchorless
whim.
like chaffs in the whirlwind, because we don't have anchors.
News organizations who continually are wrong,
yeah,
over and over and over again.
Been
people
caught red-handed.
Still listen to
they've
them.
Been caught red-handed.
Why
manipulating
would people listen
footage?
To liars?
I mean, they had people during the COVID-19 thing. They had fake people in line to like show that the line was longer. They got caught. They had to remove the story.
Employees going and standing in line.
This is a major news network. Yes. We won't mention any names. CBS. You know, and you're like, how do we believe these people? But this is the exact same thing that's happening, and they seek to they can get people to renounce any sense of morality, any sense of a righteous way of living, a good moral life, which to them, good moral life would mean accepting everything and anything and everything, whatever, because it's you, it should be true to yourself. No, there are guidelines. It's called the Ten Commandments. Like, you know, and as soon as we go away from that, we see society in chaos. What's happening right now? In chaos. And what have we been doing? We've been removing God from schools. We've been removing, God from
the Ten Commandments from all the courthouses.
And we're using, Thomas Jefferson's words of separation of church and state. Thomas Jefferson put a church inside the court. There's a church in the building. This is the man who said separation of church and state. Obviously, we're misinterpreting something he said, which was, by the way, only in one letter.
Yes.
And this is what's being used.
That's the one they focus on the most.
The linchpin to get God out of our lives. And as soon as we start,
Jefferson's idea was to separate church and state, meaning that the state was not to be sponsoring the religion.
Sponsoring.
But there should be no reciprocal...
It was more than just sponsoring, though.
To keep religion from being in the government.
It was more than just sponsoring, the church-sponsored religion. It was to keep government out of religion. In other words, government not coming to your faith and telling you what to believe.
But not to keep religion out of government.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was James Madison, the most sacred of all property, conscience. A man's, a person's conscience is the most sacred of all property.
Yep.
And that's...
He also said that when they asked, said, what have you wrought, basically, and I think it was John Adams, he said, a republic if we can keep it, and then he basically said something to the effect of the Constitution of the United States is wholly inadequate for the...
For the government of any other.
Of any other besides honorable, decent...
And he used the analogy of a whale breaking through a net. Because that is why our country worked, because for over a century, the people that founded our government were prepared to live a life that could foster freedom. When we've gone into Iraq or wherever. We've gone in and we remove a dictator, and we try to give them what we have. Yeah, we try to give them what we have. What happens? Yeah. It collapses because you can't just give that to it. People has to be prepared, and the people, the founders of America, were prepared. And anyone who, it's almost not even popular to talk about them today, but it's ridiculous. Everyone else wants to go back to the roots. Like, let's go back to the roots of eating. Let's go back to the roots of weightlifting. Let's go back to the roots of where we all learned. And then you got, weightlifters lifting rocks because this is how it was done naturally, and I get better muscle,
But I'm lifting rocks.
It's okay to do that with everything except for our own country. But that's what we need to do. We need to go back to our roots because guess what? They were the most well-read human beings.
Amazing.
That were ever inhabited this planet. They studied governments. They studied. They knew. And it really rubs me when people call, when people call this a democracy. It's not a democracy. It's a republic.
That's right.
There's a huge difference. They knew, our founders knew, that democracies don't work. They only work in a local level. They only work when the government's this small. They knew it would never work in a huge society.
Because a lot of times, just like you can see in the Book of Mormon,
mob rule.
You can get enough people to agree.
That's right.
That if you get enough people to agree that I should be able to come and take your property, or steal your family, or burn down your house, and if we get more than 50% of them to agree, then basically it's mob rule.
That's right.
So that's the difference between a democracy, a straight up democracy, and a republic. Right.
And, Electoral College is, again, one of just the golden swords, shields against a monarchy.
Yeah.
Is the Electoral College is so brilliant because even if you're cheating in elections, which God knows, there's been plenty of election.
There's been plenty of dead people
voting. Oh, yeah. Let's not get a start on that. But that's the brilliance of the Electoral College is if it actually prevents, it makes it almost impossible to cheat. because that's largely what happened in the last election. There's a lot of that going on. Like, you don't even have to like the president. In fact, you can totally hate him. Even the Washington Post, all the mainstream, they're calling it a miracle. It was a miracle. It was a miracle that he won. Because I mean, everyone, his own establishment,
they all believe the Republicans, that he was not going to win.
And so anyway, it's just an interesting state of affairs that we're in for sure.
Let's see. So Malachi, basically, they chase him off. This is where the title of liberty comes in, and I love this. This is the so Moroni says, and this is verse 11 of chapter 46. It says, "Now it came to pass that when Moroni, who was the chief commander of the armies of the Nephites, had heard of these dissensions, he was angry with Amalickiah."
There's that word.
He was angry. There we go. "It came to pass that he rent his coat, and he took a piece thereof and wrote upon it." Now it's interesting. He had a coat. If he lived in Central America, what would he need a coat for?
Yeah.
And why would these people need to have thick garments? How would they even fight if they had thick garments and that kind of stuff? And I guess the Mayan people did, in fact, have some kind of a heavier, you know, material that they would wear for their soldiers. But basically, but he says right here, he rent his coat. So he had a coat. He tore it off, basically. And then this is what he put on it. And I'm going to show you. Not a replica of the actual flag. But you're going to hold that side there. Basically, there it is. We'll hold it up there so we can see that. And this is what he wrote on it. This is Captain Moroni. He says, "In memory of our God, our religion and freedom, and our peace, our wives, and our children." Why would they have to have it in memory? Because it wasn't happening at that point in time.
Remember.
Trying to remember, get them to God. Remember. You're not. It's not. We're not so far gone that we can't remember this. And by the way, if you'd like to get a copy or one of these flags, we do have them on our website in the room. This is the smaller one here, and then we've got the monster size here. So, just show you how big this one is. This is one you can hang up in your neighborhood or underneath the American flag if you feel so just inclined to do so. But there's basically, again, the Title of Liberty flag that we then you can get those off of from our bookstore. Anyway, so and also I want to point out on page 296 in the book here, this is an awesome painting that was done by my friend David Lindsley, and David Lindsley wanted to have kind of unlike we have Arnold Freeberg depictions of like Helaman, for example. And he's sitting up on his horse, and he's looking down at all of his soldiers and so forth, and others that have been depicting of Captain Moroni as, you know, he's a big, strong guy and so forth. But David Lindsley said, you know what? He was a strong guy, yes, and he has some nice biceps and so forth, and he's you know, pretty built and that kind of thing. But he said, I wanted to depict him as not looking down upon his men, but rather looking up towards God for his direction. And he has the flag, basically, with the Hebrew broadcloth, basically, with the red and white alternating stripes. And then on it, it has the words here. And if you take a close look at that, folks, this is going to be kind of fun here. I don't know if you can see that very well or not. You can go to your Annotated Book of Mormon, and you can check it out. Can you read that? Try. See if you can read that. "In memory of our God, our religion..." Next line, "and freedom and our peace." And the next line, "our wives and our children." By the way, all of the characters that you just read are characters from the Anthon transcript, which came from the Book of Mormon. So those are all Nephite or basically Reformed Egyptian characters. But they kind of look like English characters. So David arranged them in that way, but I love this because it shows the Captain Moroni, the Title of Liberty. But what a lot of people don't know, and this is something that I know that you're already aware of this, but I just wanted to share just a couple of quick things. George Washington, talking about another great military leader, another great warrior. A lot of people don't know about this talk that he gave. This was an address to the inhabitants of Canada. Got done on the 14th of September, 1775. So this is before 1776, right? Just a year before. And he basically starts off with friends and brethren. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but the second paragraph down, it says, "Come then, my brethren." This is George Washington now writing. It says, "Come then, my brethren, unite with us in an indissoluble union. Let us run together to the same goal. We have taken up arms in defense of our liberty, our property, our wives, and our children. We are determined to preserve them or die. We look forward with pleasure to that day not far remote, we hope, when the inhabitants of America shall have one sentiment and the full enjoyment of the blessings of a free government." Is that just amazing, or what do you think? So then it says, "I invite you therefore as friends and brethren to provide him with such supplies as your country affords." That's good. That's actually coming up in the next couple of chapters here. Yeah. "And I pledge myself not only for your safety and security, but for ample compensation. Let no man desert his habitation. Let no one flee as before an enemy. The cause of America and the cause of liberty is the cause of every virtuous American citizen. Whatever may be his religion or his descent, the United Colonies know no distinction, but such as slavery, corruption, and arbitrary domination may create. Come then, ye generous citizens, range yourselves under the standard of general liberty against which all the force and artifice of tyranny will never be able to prevail." I mean, just the eloquence that he writes with is just amazing. This is a warrior guy. and the eloquence, but if you take a look at just the similarities between someone who I would consider to be a prophet, George Washington, and Captain Moroni, and just the similarities there, and also they talked about running together, and then actually in these verses that we were just talking about, they talked about how the Nephites did run together. You know, yeah. So even that has some similarities. It's almost like it was come from that.
So like he said too, just he could have just said every American citizen.
Yeah.
He said every virtuous
American citizen.
There's the foundation of liberty, virtue. The foundation
the virtue
of liberty,
right there.
Morality, virtue. Every virtuous
in this letter
is the cause of every virtuous.
Yeah.
American citizen.
And there's a lot more to that. So hopefully you'll get your books out and actually check it out. Then Moroni makes his covenant with God. He places all of a particular land, but not the entire land, but portions of it. He says that in verse 17, he says, "It came to pass that when he had poured out his soul to God, he named all the land which was south of the land desolation." So there's land desolation is not part of it. "Yea, and in fine, all the land, both on the north and on the south, a chosen land and the land of liberty."
Not a land of liberty.
It's the land of liberty. That's right.
Isn't that interesting?
It's a different thing. It's a specific land. And he said, "Surely God will not suffer that we, who are despised because we take upon us the name of Christ, shall be trodden down and destroyed until we bring it upon us by our own transgressions.
Our own.
Isn't it interesting, folks, that basically you have Adam and Eve and their posterity here in the heartland of America, basically in their time frame.
Yeah.
And because of their iniquity, basically, they get wiped out. Then the Jaredites come over here. And who came in and wiped out the Jaredites? No one.
They themselves.
They turn on each other and they kill themselves all the way down to one guy left.
Yeah.
Okay? Then the Nephites come here. And did another civilization come in and conquer the Nephites? No, they split up. They turned on each other, and then they killed the Nephites all the way down to one guy. So if that's the kind of the pattern here in the Promised Land, what do you think might happen then for the final cleansing?
Well,
I think it's going to be other countries at first.
Oh, it's not right now. I mean, we're getting ripped apart as a nation.
America
and
is going to turn itself and turn on themselves, and basically we will kill ourselves down to the point where other nations will be easily able to come. We're going to weaken ourselves to the point where other nations will be able to come in, and they'll divide up the spoils. If we don't turn our hearts and our minds back to God as a nation, this nation was placed under covenant by this guy, George Washington. on the day of his inauguration as he became the new president of the United States of America. And that place was that right there in the St. Paul Cathedral in New York. And and if you've been following our research, you know about the connections with that and 9/11, right? And what happened there. So he made this covenant. This is not the first time a covenant's been made. The covenant was made by Adam and Eve. It was made again by the Jaredites. It's now it was made again by Jacob when he, Lehi, basically. Lehi is Jacob. And then and now we have Moroni also forming another a new covenant. They basically are resurrecting this covenant. When people forget about this covenant, they basically do it anew. I want you to keep your eyes open. Actually, when this comes out in August, it'll probably already have happened. Well, it will have already happened. But keep your eyes open on Tim Ballard and Glenn Beck, because they have some interesting things going on the 4th of July involving this covenant thing. They because of the COVID virus, it's kind of really messed up their whole event. They had a huge event going on, but they're still going to basically do it, as I talked to Tim, and he said they're still going to be able to do at least portions of it. So I want you to you can't keep your eye on it because it's already happened at this point, right? I hope that this goes off without a hitch for Tim and his group, because they're going to basically has to do with this reinvoking of this covenant anew. And Moroni basically he averts mass dissension. How did he do that? Well, Amalickiah, when he tried to become the king. And then he didn't allow that to happen. So then I think this is really fascinating, folks. This is in verse 30. He says, "Now Moroni thought it was not expedient that the Lamanites should have any more strength by these dissenting Amalekites. Therefore, he thought to cut off the people of Amalickiah, or to take them and bring them back and put Amalickiah to death." Well, they went and they actually did. Said they entered into a covenant to keep the peace. They cut off the course of Amalickiah. They headed the armies of Amalickiah. That's an interesting term. They headed the Amalekite army, basically the armies of Amalickiah. When in the term headed, that means that they didn't start from where they began. They actually set them on a course to intersect with them. And that's why the head of the river also can mean an intersection as well, because they're talking about being headed there. And it came to pass that Amalickiah fled with a small number of his men, so he got away. But everybody else basically came back and said, okay, we're going to support the cause of freedom. But not everybody, because it says in verse 35, "And it came to pass that whomsoever of the Amalickiahites that would not enter into a covenant to support the cause of freedom, that they might maintain a free government," because there's no way that they could do it at this point in time. There's just too many people who are not doing that. They didn't have any other choice. He says, so he caused them to be put to death.
And there were but few who denied the covenant of freedom.
Yeah. So a lot of people decided, you know what, better to live than to die. But they had to make this covenant. And they took covenants very seriously, as we pointed out already in this podcast. So I think it's I can't even imagine something like that happening in our day. But there must have been some reason why Mormon decided to put this in to the book. Because that's basically, Moroni's back was against the wall. It was either...
Well, they were on the... Basically...
They had no other choice.
It was civil war, essentially. They were on the brink of a complete...
Complete collapse of their entire society. And either they had to take the cause of freedom, or they basically got killed.
Well, and this also...
they were afraid to let them go over to the dissenters because they were already so powerful that they had a problem with the outside dissenters. I mean, with the...
So there's a point we... on the Zoramites that... Moroni learned from that incident, because what had happened is the Zoramites had dissented from the Nephite government. They were kind of... And what did the Nephite government do? They allowed them to do that and to stay, and Moroni said no. And that is why, the United States people say, well, we're going to secede from the Union and be right. That's why it was so critical when I think it's Abraham Lincoln keeping it together, because he knew if we divide, and this is where
it was causing civil war. A lot of people did in fact die.
Moroni learned from the Zoramite war that caused so much bloodshed because they allowed them to stay. And here you got a Malachi trying to do the same thing. He's like, look, we learned from the past. That was a big mistake. We're not going to allow that anymore. If you don't honor the covenant of freedom, that's fine. We'll let you live, but you got to go. You got to go somewhere else. Or yeah. If you're going to stay here, you got a covenant freedom. You know, and it's like, is that such a hard thing?
I've often wondered. I wonder if this had something to do with Abraham Lincoln when he read the Book of Mormon, which we don't know for absolute certainty if he did, but Tim Ballard has shown evidence that he had it for 6 months or so.
Dog-eared some of the pages.
Dog-eared some pages and so forth. I mean, maybe that gave him the strength to basically to then propose the Emancipation Proclamation.
Exactly.
And to basically say, we are going to free the slaves.
Yep.
So let's see a couple other last things. In verse 40 here of the same chapter says, and there were some who died with fevers, which at some seasons of the year were very frequent in the land, but not so much with fevers because of the excellent qualities of the many plants and roots which God had prepared to remove the cause of diseases to which men were subject to by the nature of the climate. So what was the nature of the climate? They had seasons.
Yeah.
So they had to have seasons. Now, they also had to have seasons. If you take a look on page 300, it talks about the law of Moses, because the law of Moses basically requires seasons. And they were, and we know that they were living the laws of Moses throughout the entire text of the Book of Mormon, right up until at least till the time of Christ. And so they had that the law of Moses has these seasonal feasts with where you have to basically plant in the spring, you have a harvest in the fall, and there's all these different aspects of this, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the Festival of First Fruits, and Passover, and so forth. Anyway, all of these different things are directly connected to the seasonality of the year. And in Central America, you really don't have seasons other than you have basically a wet and a dry season. But they don't have seasons like we have up here.
I lived there for 2 years.
So you know.
El Salvador.
So you know. Yeah, so bottom line is that Amalekai then, he goes over, he dissents, he becomes basically
through treachery.
Involved with the Lamanite king. Then he, through treachery.
We don't want to focus on that because that's all evil.
Yeah, that's all nasty stuff. Yeah, we don't want to talk about that stuff. Okay, anyway, and then we get into, and we're going to talk about this in a future one. I think let's go ahead and let's see. There's a couple more things that you wanted to cover here, wasn't there, Darren?
Let me see.
Because in 48, Moroni begins to prepare his people, and he does some interesting things.
Oh yeah. In 48, I have a couple things there.
Yeah, go ahead.
So seven, that while Amalekai had been obtaining power by fraud and deceit, Moroni, on the other hand, had been preparing the minds of the people to be faithful unto the Lord. So when you say preparing the minds, what was he doing? He was either preaching to them, having Alma preach to them, Helaman, I know, was preaching to them, but he was preparing their minds. He was educating them and inspiring them to be faithful to God. While Malachi is over here doing this. And then I have highlighted just a few things here interesting that what he does, he builds walls of stone to encircle them about in basically the borders of their lands. So he strengthens their borders. Think about what's going on right now. I mean, look at this. You just can't.
What? He built walls around their country?
He's building walls around the country. Why? Because when you have people in your country who have no allegiance to your country, they will destroy your country.
Yeah.
It just happens. If they don't have an allegiance to your country, to your flag, that's dangerous. And you know,
different nationalities in different countries have different cultures and different traditions.
Which is fine. It's just they can't come in and say, I'm going to change America to my. No.
Yeah.
We honor your culture,
but many of those cultures are not fine.
Right.
Like for example, in New Zealand, where they used to have they eat people.
Yeah.
cannibalism.
Yeah.
That's not a fine thing.
Yeah.
You know, some cultures, there's a lot of different cultures out there, but the bottom line is the United States was based on the culture of Christianity.
Right.
Through the Europeans who had the Catholic Church and so forth, and so they had this Christian tradition of believing in Christ, who taught, turn the other cheek and all these other things that actually
virtues.
Went with the commandments of God, actually went beyond the commandments. And that culture has produced nations that basically have, to a large extent, ruled the world. You know, from the Romans to, you know, to later on with the English colonization to the, you know, Spaniards and so forth. All Europe basically went out and did that. Now the Chinese, they kind of stayed in their general areas. I mean, they expanded their regions and so forth. But the bottom line is that really going over the world was this expansion of Christianity as they were going out to try to proselyte the Catholic Church basically to all these other nations. And right. So when you see all that, you know, going on with the United States, you know, being as a part of that, you know, that's a really interesting, you know, prospect to consider, you know, how that this is all, you know, expanded out like that. Anyway, go ahead.
I just fortified and strengthened their borders and all their cities. And then, of course, you have the strong and mighty man. Moroni was a strong and mighty man, perfect understanding.
Yeah, love that.
In other words, he had common sense. He had reason. Like Thomas Paine said, trying to argue with someone who's abandoned reason is like administering medicine to the dead. Yeah. And you have to have common sense. You have to be able to say, that doesn't make sense. You know. So he was a man of perfect understanding, did not delight in bloodshed. His soul did joy in liberty and freedom of his country and his brethren from bondage and slavery.
Yeah.
So he's the most anti-slavery guy you could possibly, yes. You know, heart did swell with thanksgiving to his God for his many privileges and blessings. Here you have a grateful person. God, I'm so grateful to live in the United States of America. You know, that's one of the problems is ingratitude.
People don't want to say that.
Well, what do you owe me? You know, I mean, Kennedy, John F. Kennedy said, you know, what? Don't ask what you can country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I mean, it's a great.
That's a great
statement.
Model,
from a you know, fallible man, you know, like all of our presidents have not been perfect, but you know that's something you take, and that concept of what can you do for what can you do for your country, what can you do for your country, and we've
completely
all but
flipped
lost
that. You know, basically what
can the country do for me?
Most governors are like, put me in as a governor because I'll see how much I can get from the federal government. Well, where does that money come from? Comes from we the people. Ultimately, we back all that money,
right?
And so when we give out $3 trillion to businesses and so forth to keep them running, somebody's going to have to pay for that. That just didn't. Well, I guess technically the Federal Reserve actually just created out of thin air. Yeah,
that's a whole other
podcast. More zeros on a different thing. But anyway, so enough about that. But the last of his qualities here,
the powers of hell.
Yeah, number five. Man, you already said about number five there. By the way, in the Annotated Book of Mormon, we have these listed in numbers. Man who did labor exceedingly for the welfare and safety of his people, so he was industrious, basically. And then, yea, and he was number seven, a man who was firm in the faith of Christ and had sworn with an oath to defend his people, his rights, and his country, and his religion, even to the loss of his blood. Brothers and sisters, how many of us have done that? How many of us have actually made that covenant that we will take an oath to defend our people, our rights, our country, our religion, even to the loss of our own blood? I think all of us need to take a serious look at that and say, is that something that we would be willing to do? Have we done so? Have we taken that oath to defend our families and our lives and our liberty? Brothers and sisters, we may be living in a time when that could be challenged.
Yep.
That very thing could be challenged. And then I love this. This is on page 304. This is a beautiful painting here by Clark Kelly Price. Moroni fortifies the lands of the Nephites, and it has a picture with the ditches and the earth banks and the palisade of timbers and the towers and the so forth there. But this is one of my very favorite scriptures here. It says this is from Alma chapter 48, verses. This is verse 17, I think. It says, "Yea, verily, verily, I say unto you, if all men had been and were and ever would be like unto Moroni, behold, the very powers of hell would have been shaken forever. Yea, the devil would never have power over the hearts of the children of men."
Can I add to that? you're looking at Moroni as a character in a movie, you're wondering what kind of guy. We got a good taste right there, right?
Yeah.
What's the very next verse?
Go ahead and read that.
Behold, he was a man like unto Ammon. And Ammon was one of the vilest of sinners.
Yeah.
And then the next person he mentions, the sons of Mosiah.
Yeah.
Alma and his sons. So he immediately says that, and then he immediately compares him to someone who would be perceived, at least in the early part of his life, as complete opposite.
Yeah.
And so that leads
mistakes,
you
to, the early part of their lives.
Early parts of their lives, right. They, yeah. The people who changed.
So maybe there's some hope.
There is some creative liberty there that if you're portraying Moroni, this man who shook the powers of hell, that you could show that he actually was a very wicked person before he became the person that he was.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily how we portray him in the film, but that verse has always stuck out to me, that it immediately follows that verse where we learn that, I mean, the guy's almost untouchable. It's like, well, who is this guy? I don't know anybody like that. Like, dude, there's no hope for me, you know? And then the very next verse is, he was like Ammon.
Yeah.
And
I think it also gives us some hope, though, that even though we make even monumental, colossal mistakes in our lives, that there's always a path back. God has always provided a way to return back to him.
That's right.
And to overcome, even when you've persecuted the church, even, like the sons of Mosiah and Alma the younger did. Here we have this person here. Again, we don't know what Moroni's younger life was like, but clearly the end of his life, he was a man of God. He's a man of the highest and utmost character.
Unshakable.
And unshakable. And if more of us would be like him.
Incorruptible.
If more of us men, specifically, guys, I'm going to talk to you for just a second because by the way, we're going to have Jason Mao is going to be next week. He's going to talk about you, these sisters, okay, a little bit. The importance of the sisters, because that has to do with the Helaman and the 2,000 warriors and so forth, and who taught them. But guys, it's time that we warrior up as members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and as priesthood holders. It's time for us to be honorable. It's time for us to have virtue. It's time for us to basically warrior up. This is what Jason Mao says. And be ready so when the day comes that the Lord says, okay, you know, you're on my team and you've been sitting on the sidelines for a while, and basically, the Lord's at some point in time is going to say, you know what? Darren Southam, are you here? I'm here. Go out there on the field. I need you to make this play. I need you in the action right now. This is your time. This is your time to shine. So basically, go out and do it.
And I would submit that in that moment, you better have your house in order.
You better.
And that means your wife better love you.
Yeah.
And you better, you know, live so that she can. And
you better love your wife.
And this is not, I'm not saying this because I'm that guy, because it's hard being a dad.
Yeah.
It's hard being a husband. It's probably the hardest thing you'll ever do. And that might sound really low, but it is, it's the truth. It just doesn't matter how you paint it.
But nothing worthwhile is easy.
Everything worthwhile
takes a struggle.
That's right. So it is a struggle. And you're like, oh, I actually, and that's why, you know, on a totally, you know, off note, that's why there's so much addiction, so much, because it's easier. That's easy. When I go there, and I'm not saying I go there, I'm just saying when one goes there, they know that what they're getting, and it's easy. Oh, you mean I actually have to sit down and I have to talk with my wife every day and I have to work out things and plan and I actually have to spend some time with my children and it's one of the, you know, the one of the great ironies is that you, if you don't plant something, it's not that nothing grows, weeds grow.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing with our children and with our lives, that if we don't plant something good there, weeds will grow. If we don't spend the time with our children, the weeds will grow in our children, and we'll end up having to try to root those out later when it's much more challenging. So
the same goes with our country, too. If right. good men and women do nothing, if we just kind of take a path, well, we don't want to get involved. We just don't, you know, let's not cause any waves or take a stand on anything. Then the weeds grow.
Yeah, exactly. You're segueing right into so verse 23, and we got to wrap it up.
Yep. Yep.
Verse 23. If you liken this to us, verse 23 of 48, they were sorry to take up arms against the Lamanites. Insert anything for Lamanites. We were sorry to take up arms against Antifa. We were sorry to take up arms against, you know, the looters trying to completely destroy our country. We were so sorry to have to take up arms against them and to stop the lawlessness.
Yeah.
But
the anarchy.
What does it say? In the means of sending them to jail or prison or heaven forbid some of them die in the process. They, you know, they were sad to do that. But yeah. It says, nevertheless, in 24, they could not suffer to lay down their lives, their jobs, their businesses, their wives, their children, to be massacred, to be burned, you know, whatever,
yeah.
by the most barbarous cruelty of those who were once their brethren, who were once our countrymen.
And those now, who had descended, from the, descended, who had descended from the church.
From the church, or descended from yeah. their own country, America, yeah. you know? Anyway, so think of that and just the courage that we need to exhibit today and being willing to stand up even though it's hard. Anyway, we should probably go to 49 and 50 now.
Yeah, so
jump to 50.
There yeah, we so we'll just kind of jump to 50 now.
We're, I don't have anything highlighted in 49. So
well, there's a couple of quick things here that about this, and we don't have time to get into it. We're going to get into this more with Wayne again later, and we've actually talked a little bit about this in the Annotated Book of Mormon, page 306, towards the top. It talks about again that they also prepare themselves. Let's see. 6 of chapter 49. Now the leaders of the Lamanites had supposed, because of the greatness of their numbers, yea, they supposed that they should be privileged to come upon them as they had hitherto done. Yea, and they also had prepared themselves with shields and with breastplates, and they had also prepared themselves with garments of skins and very thick garments to cover their nakedness. So they got the message.
Yeah, you know, yeah, no, they copied.
Not them. Smart to come to your, you know, to come to a gunfight with a sword.
And I actually do have lots of highlights on 49. I just it didn't come pop up right away.
But yeah.
Yeah, that's one of them.
And then it talks about the that Moroni begins to he didn't begin, but he's ongoing trying to fortify their cities. So they dig a ditch surrounding the city of Noah. They had places of entrance that they made basically killing zones. They became a defensive people.
Just bottlenecked them into
now,
the
interesting
place,
thing is, yeah. does God allow offensive wars? In other words, if they a preemptive war, did they say, you know what, the Lamanites, they might come upon you, so you probably ought to go out and preemptively take them out.
It's hard. I don't think of any ready example readily available yeah. to me that where God said, you know, go. Well,
there are in the Old Testament. There Old Testament has a couple. But in general, here in the Book of Mormon,
it's very
even when the Gadianton robbers became so awful and so powerful that they were literally destroying both the Lamanite civilization and the Nephite civilization
against them. Yeah,
they said, "Well, let's go up in the mountains. We'll go up and get them." The Lord says, "No, I forbid it. If you go after them, in this particular case, then you will fall into their hands. But instead, if you basically pull back and defend what you've got, then I will protect you."
Yeah.
And let me tell you, folks, having the protection from God is a lot better than trying to protect everything yourself. So they talked about this force of security. There's more on page 308. It talks about their garments of skins, yea, very thick garments to cover their nakedness. And we talk about that in some detail here about the times of the year and the wars 50. And so forth. That's on page 308. This is coming up to 50 here.
Okay.
Then it talks about the skin girt about their loins. And, of course, we have an interview with Samoset with the pilgrims. When he shows up with them, all he has is a loincloth on. People say, well, how could they just wear a loincloth if it happened here in North America? Well, Samoset wasn't having a problem with that. And none of the Native Americans were having a problem with that. Of course, they weren't wearing them in December or January. But, nevertheless, they would wear them throughout the year, the loincloths. And we get to chapter 50. This talks about this gives us some deeper understanding of the different methodologies that Moroni employed to try to defend the cities. And talked about the works of timbers, built up the height of a man. Anyway, we don't have time to go into all that detail, but Did you have anything from 49 or
59? So just 49. This is going along with that the battle that happened where I firmly believe that's where the chief captain died and Moroni took the battlefield and did what he did to become. It uses the same language to describe the battle. It was such an one as never had been known among all the children of Lehi, you know, since he left Jerusalem. And here we have in verse 8 of 49 that to their uttermost astonishment, the Lamanites' astonishment, they were prepared, the Nephites were prepared for them in a manner which never had been known among the children of Lehi. So we have the very same language being used to describe this battle that took place, even though Moroni wasn't mentioned. And this is my contention as to, yeah, he was involved in that because Mormons use the same language. He's dropping us a hint right here that they were astonished because never had been known this manner of preparation that he, I mean, he was just a...
Brilliant.
He was brilliant, It's like, what can we do to... I mean, he fortified those cities so incredibly, you know, that when they attacked them, they literally killed 1,000 Lamanites and not a single Nephite was slain. When they'd sworn an oath to attack it, they attacked it anyway, and you know they met their demise. But yeah, just the fortifications, and just from a film perspective, my goodness, this is going to be incredible to portray this and show this level of preparation, which again is all very, very analogous spiritually. This is just like, how do we prepare spiritually? What are the you know, heaps of earth and walls of stone that we can put up to protect us from the fiery darts
of the
adversary today, the armor that we put on today. And I would submit that most that armor is here in the mind, preparing our minds, right? And you know, and other things as necessary, you know, when people are dealing with addictions or you know, whatever, where there's a lot of that today. There are tools, you know, people that can help with those things, and you can overcome. There's nothing you can't overcome, you know, through the atonement. But these are amazing times.
Yeah, and I think of, not just only the spiritual side of things, but also the physical preparedness stuff. You know, I mean, basically.
Yeah, you better be hitting the gym, Rod.
I hit it once in a while. I'm just kidding. I'm talking about both emotional and the spiritual preparedness part is the single most important thing, but also being emotionally prepared. Right. You know, it talks about that in some of these cases where the people were so taken by the things that had been happening that they basically just cursed God and died. They just couldn't take it emotionally. So as we prepare for the things that are coming in anticipation of the return of Christ, you know, I think that for me, the easiest way to get through all this, number one, try to have the Spirit with you so you can be guided and directed in the things that you should and shouldn't do, but also keep your eye on the ball. What is that? Keep your eye on Christ.
Yeah.
Keep focused on Christ. As long as you are doing and serving and everything that he is doing and he's guiding your life, then you will be in the right places at the right times for the right reasons, and you'll be preserved.
And what better way to keep your eye on Christ than to read a book that mentions him almost 4,000 times?
That's right.
Like, I mean, this...
Yep. And also to engage, get ourselves engaged. I know we mentioned this in the early couple of podcasts, but it's been quite a while. Basically, the Book of Mormon is the subject material every 4 years. It's interesting that it happens to always fall on election years in the United States of America for the president. That we're studying the Book of Mormon, which has all this information that that people even like, President Lincoln, like Abraham Lincoln, how he read the book and how it made him a better national leader.
Right.
If he actually did, in fact, read the book, which we believe that he did, but so this book can have such a powerful influence, folks. We've got to finish up here. We are done. So thank you for hanging out there with us with Darren Southam. It's been an honor and a privilege. It's been wonderful to have you come and share some of your insights, and we thank wish you Godspeed and getting this film financed and get it going and so forth. And is there anything we can do to help? If any of you happen to feel that you have the capacity to help to support this this project, where would they go to just contact you? Or
you go to rainmovie.com.
Yes. Okay.
Rain as in
just as a reminder.
Raining. Yep.
Yep.
Rainmovie.com. And if you're interested in investing in the film, just fill out the really quick and simple investment form. We'll reach out to you.
Yeah.
If you're interested in supporting it, just donate. You can do it right there.
Yeah.
Just,
if you have $20 to $40 million burning a hole in your pocket.
Yeah. And we don't need that much, as it were, because of the way we're making it now. But yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. But I would really love to see this happen. Maybe it's going to touch somebody's heart and say, you know what, this needs to happen, and this is the time. I think what you said in the trailer there, yep, is apropos. If not now, when?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If not you, who? You know, is going to do this.
And what's the most influential medium we have in the world? It's media.
Yeah.
You know?
And film is so powerful, and it's been used for so many bad things. It's nice when occasionally then there's good things that come about.
That's exactly right. And if we abandon it entirely because of all the bad things that are in it, I talk to people, I don't watch movies anymore because it's just, if we take that approach, that's disastrous, because I can tell you the other side, you know, the devil's side, they are, the left side, whatever, that's where they put their money.
That's
because
right.
It's where the influence.
That they can influence the entire culture that way.
There's been some studies. How many films do you think somebody watches in their lifetime? Let's guess. Give me a guess.
I don't know. 1,000? I don't know.
There's a Redbox study. Most people will watch over 5,000 movies in their lifetime.
Wow.
And 41% of Americans say a movie influenced the way they see the world. That's almost half of our country in America.
Yeah.
That has influenced the way they see the world from movies they watch.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then the other ones, the average American watches almost 8 hours of TV and video on demand every day, which is more now because of what we just went through, the lockdown.
But the lockdowns.
The point is that that's where the eyeballs are. That's where the influence is. And, if we can, create a film that's compelling and has all the elements, of a compelling story, follows those eternal beats, that even the life of Jesus Christ follows those eternal beats of storytelling, maybe we could reach someone and they can maybe even just think that, oh, maybe there's another way to see things. Yeah. When you see people fighting for freedom and bleeding for freedom, which,
there's not nearly enough of, apparently, because my perspective of where our country is, is highly influenced by the news that I watch.
Right.
And it seems like everything is completely coming apart at the seams, even though when you come up and down the streets here of Utah, it seems like everything's pretty normal.
Yeah.
But having, police cars actually burned in the streets of Salt Lake City is something I've never seen before in my lifetime.
I saw that in the Benghazi tapes.
It happens in other places, but not here in the U.S.
Now it's happening here, exactly.
It's happening all over the place here, and these cities are being burned out. Anyway, I hope that this has been informative. I hope you've enjoyed the information. We are excited about continuing on with these podcasts. We want to express our gratitude and thanks and support to all of you for having taken the time to watch these. If you would, it would really help if you would share these with other people. They're free. This is one of the things that's been, we've had a difficulty doing that because it's not, like you were saying before, doing the marketing part of this is not inexpensive. So getting the word out about the Book of Mormon takes a lot of time, effort, and a lot of different experts and professionals working together to make that happen. And everybody needs to be able to feed their families to some extent. So if there's a way that you can help us, one of the great ways to do this would be to just like this and share it and spread it around to your family, friends, and neighbors, and let them know about this weekly podcast that hopefully is going to bring you closer to the Lord, closer to an understanding of the Book of Mormon like you've never had before, and ultimately hopefully it strengthens your testimony of the gospel of Jesus Christ. So that's our basic goal. That's our design. I know that Darren here has been a warrior for this cause, and he's been a champion for this. And for that, we want to thank you for being there. So the next week, we're going to be talking about chapters 50 through, I think it's 63. It's another they did not give us a lot of time on these chapters, unfortunately, because there's just so much good information in it. But this will be basically from 50 to 63, and talking about Helaman's warrior. So,
Tiancum.
Yeah, and Tiancum, and the end of Tiancum.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you so much, folks.
If you like this Come Follow Me supplemental study, click the like button and share it with your friends. You can also send your family and friends to bookofmormonevidence.org, which is a hub with all the links that you would like to the podcasts, to upcoming events, the store at the 400 answers to the Book of Mormon. Also, don't forget, this summer you can have a spiritual boost every day by going to bookofmormonevidencestreaming.com.